Good morning. We're going to call this meeting of the Subcommittee on Elections to order. We do have a quorum present. We do not? Oh, we do not. But I would like to, at this time, thank you for your patience. At this time, we are going to call a recess to the call of the chair between 10:05 and 10:15 to get started for today. Thank you. All right. Good morning. I will call this meeting back into order for the Subcommittee on Elections. It appears that we do have a quorum present at this time. I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 13th, 2020. Would someone like to move the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Nash. The minutes have been moved. Is there any discussion on the minutes? All right, hearing none, I'll say aye to approve the minutes.
Aye.
Aye. Any say, are those opposed? Okay, great. We'll move on to that. Next up, we have before us House File 3429, Representative Dean, would you like to move your bill?
Chair Bonner, yes, I'd move House File 3429, and I believe this goes to
the Government Operations?
Government Operations. I would move it, that it be re-referred to Government Operations.
Thank you. We can move House File 3429 is recommended to be referred. And do you have an amendment, Chair Dean?
I don't believe we have an amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. No amendments. Then, Chair Dean, if you'd like to go ahead and speak to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the Elections Administration Bill, which I think we spent quite a bit of time talking about last session. There have been a few slight changes made to this, and so I would like to turn it over to the government affairs person at the Office of Secretary of State, Sam Bonowitz, to speak to those changes, not to the whole bill at this time. But we will certainly be open to questions if members have questions on that.
Chair, members, Sam Bonowitz, Director of Government Relations with the Office of the Secretary of State. As Chair Dean mentioned, this includes provisions from the 2018 and 2019 Elections Admin Bill, but it does include 12 new provisions in addition to what was heard last year. So I'll walk through the 12 new provisions. Section 1, while this isn't new, we did tweak the language. This year's bill gives Safe at Home Office the option to either print those materials directly from the statewide voter registration system or request those ballot materials from the county directly. This is because we've learned that not all ballot types are within the statewide voter registration system. There are some townships, for example, their elections, those ballots are not within the statewide voter registration system. Section 2 includes residential treatment facilities and adult foster care homes as residential facilities for the purposes of facilitating same-day voter registration. Section 17 and Section 18, that just updates the language used to describe the outer envelope in absentee voting with the voter's signature to be a signature envelope rather than a return envelope for clarity. And then similarly updating the language from security envelope to secrecy envelope, and that is also found in Section 20 as well. Section 28 allows mail balloting in any town or city with fewer than 400 registered voters. Including those within the 7-county metro region. Under current law, these towns and cities are only eligible if they're located outside of that metro region. Section 41 through 43, that just extends the special election timeline while the legislature is in session by 14 days. This is a response to recent special elections where absentee ballots were unable to be delivered and returned in a timely manner for those ballots to be counted. Section 54, this just clearly states that safe at home participants are able to cast their ballot in the manner provided for in Chapter 5. although Minnesota statute does say that the presidential nomination primary is to be conducted in the same manner as the state primary, and therefore participants are able to vote as they do currently, we thought having this explicitly in statute for clarity's sake was appropriate. Again, this is a largely clarifying kind of bill, so we just included that. Section 55 clarifies that some of the provisions within 207A.13, that's the presidential nomination primary, are specific only to the participating major parties. So only the participating major parties need to get us the candidates to appear on the ballot. Only the participating major parties will have printed ballots. Section 56 removes the requirement of notice that the voter choice of political party will be public information. This is no longer accurate. It still requires that we notify voters of the requirements of 207A.12, paragraph B, which does include the recordation requirement. 57 extends the deadline for major political parties that for when they have to get their certified candidates for president and vice president, as well as presidential electors, to our office to allow for a later national convention for one of the major parties. The last one, Section 64, aligns the timeline of the 2017 voting equipment grants with the timeline of the 2019 voting equipment grants, so that they both end on the same time to allow for a more streamlined process for the counties and cities and our office. The 2017 funds are scheduled to expire June 30th of 2020, and this would make them available June 30th, 2022. And that is all of the new provisions. Okay.
Right. Thank you. Do we have any discussion to the bill? Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, Madam Chair, I wasn't sure if you're going to take public testimony before you were going to take member questions. And if you'd like to defer to public testimony, I do have a couple questions when the time is appropriate.
Okay. Would we prefer to do public testimony first?
Sure.
We certainly can. Do we have any testifiers to the bill? All right, hearing none, we are back to member questions. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on page 19 on lines 19.18 through 19.20. And it has to do with notification of a candidate who may be a write-in candidate. It says that a written request must be filed with the chief elections officer at least 7 days before the city election. Mm-hmm. My question is there any thing that prescribes what is or defines what the written request is, and could that be denied by the clerk if the clerk doesn't think that it's valid or has the information the clerk would like to see in there? And then is 7 days 7 calendar days or is it 7 working days? I don't know if that's defined in election statute, so I just have those two questions to get started here.
Yeah, so this section just adds language to give cities the option to require write-in candidates for local elective office file a formal request if they wish to have those write-in votes individually recorded. And this is already, we already have a process in place for this for candidates for county, state, and federal offices. I'm going to be honest, I don't know if it's calendar days or working days.
Representative Gehring, would you like to weigh on that? Mr. Gehring, excuse me. Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, there's not a definition of number of days in statute, but in other places in election law, we use calendar days to count days rather than business days.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The written request, so there could be multiple elections that are on that ballot. So if I come in and I say, I, Tim O'Driscoll, want you to count any ballots that have my name on them. Does that suffice as written notification without specifying which race or which office or ballot question or whatever the case may be?
Chair, members, I believe that you can only be on one within one race for that election.
Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I understand that when you file, you can only file for one election or one office at a time, but this is asking for a counting of write-in ballots. So if I am going to be mounting a campaign, I am not on the ballot, I'm being written in. So my question is that written request, I just want to make sure that a candidate who is a in-writing candidate in particularly for smaller communities, that they're not going to be disadvantaged or aggrieved by the fact that a town of 400 picking a number, the clerk says, well, I don't know if this is a written request. You didn't specify which office it is, so I don't know if this meets it. Written request is very open-ended, and so I'm just questioning what the criteria would be that a potential writing candidate would have to give. And I'm just trying to avoid future problems, questions, and litigation.
Ms. Bonowitz.
Chair, members, I believe the intent is to have it be for one office, for the office that they are requesting that their name be recorded for and tallied for.
Okay. Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll?
Mr. Gehring, I guess I just asked if there's any clarification that you could provide on this, because it seems like, I said, a little bit of ambiguous language where someone who is a candidate who at the last minute decides they want to run as a write-in could be denied because the written request, that just says a written request, but it was like, well, you didn't tell me which office, so maybe you can shed some light on that for the committee and the public today.
Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, so you're right about the statute that just prohibits people from filing more than one affidavit for office, so that would be the filing for office piece. I'm not sure the answer about the write-in requests. I think that if someone had a concern about the way a write-in request was processed, they'd have the ability to either contest the election or file a petition to, it's an errors and omissions process where you could assert that the local clerk failed to recognize the request properly, so you have a remedy that way. But there's no there's no clear standard in the statute on whether it needs to be for a specific office or not.
Madam Chair, this will be my last
Mr.
question.
Fischel, yes.
To the bill author, do you want clarifying language on this, or so we could avoid it today if this becomes law, where we wouldn't have to have these challenges and extra involvement with appeals and petitions and the like, or do you want to just go with a written request and hope for the best?
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, I'm actually sort of in step with you that clarity would be good.
Uh-oh.
On this. No, it's okay. It's okay. That happens occasionally. That there is clarity, because I understand what you're saying. It's like, well, you know, I might have write-ins in all of the offices here, so I want you to count all of those when we know the clear intent is an individual who might be running on a write-in for a particular office. That those votes would be counted in a town of 400, that could make a huge difference. So I think some clarity might be good to add to this, and you know, this is moving to government operations, and I believe that the person to your left sits on that committee, and we could certainly amend this as it moves forward into government operations.
Thank you, Chair Teen. Representative O'Driscoll?
I guess I would like to have seen it in the Elections Committee, since it's an elections-related issue, and we could do our committee work here, but if we're going to move it to government operations, I guess my next chance to speak will be on the House floor regarding it. So.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So same passage. So was a mayor of a statutory city myself, and have seen both in my district and in my own city a write-in campaign that was sort of in stealth mode before the election, and the requirement of a seven-day request before the election would sort of out the stealth mode write-in campaign. And let's say a person running for mayor in a small town 7 days prior to the election did something really stupid. That, you know, mayors never do that, but, you know, but if a candidate did something that was going to upset the electorate, this is going to say that a write-in campaign person at the last minute can't ask to have those votes counted individually. So I'm just trying to figure out, do we really want to do that? Because if there is some sort of malfeasance at the last minute and you want to write in somebody who you might feel is a better person for that office, you now can't ask to have those individual votes tallied aggregately.
Chair Dean, Ms. Bonowitz.
Madam Chair, I think a seven-day notice is reasonable because the city clerk's going to have to adjust accordingly. I don't know, just because I've never been involved in the city level sort of elections, like if that's then public information or has to be published in those other types of things. I mean, you could make a request 7 days in advance, and ultimately, you know, that individual could be a write-in. And I don't know if, you know, in the city that you are mayor, I don't know if your city then publicizes an individual has requested that their write-in votes be counted. So we're getting, you know, sort of in the weeds here, and this is not my expertise. I don't know if Ms. Bonowitz from the Secretary of State's office.
Perhaps Mr. Gehring might be able to shed some light on this issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, just one piece of clarification. I think you could draft the statute in whatever way you want, with whatever deadline you want. But the one thing about the 7-day period is that it corresponds to the absentee period. So absentee ballots start getting opened and counted 7 days before the election. So I think you'd want to be sure that if you change the deadline, that you have a way of counting the absentee ballot write-in candidates at the same time.
And Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Representative Nash.
And Madam Chair, I'd just like to correct our elections chair that I do believe you were involved in a small municipal trifle election at one point or another. And there could have been write-ins during that period. But I guess my point is, so let's say the city of somewhere Minnesota that has 400 people, and during that period of 7 days, something does happen. This doesn't allow for that. And I understand that early balloting might not allow for that, but let's say you have, in a city of 400 people, 300 and something voters decide to write in a new candidate. That new candidate is not going to have the ability to have those votes tallied individually. And to Representative Dean's challenge of we're getting into the weeds, well, that's what we do here. We pass laws that should be getting into the weeds so that we don't get things wrong. So I think that I do have some pause, and I believe Representative O'Driscoll has some pause on this particular passage, because it doesn't really take into consideration, since we're heading into baseball season, that hanging curve that might be out there from an election that will happen in a smaller place, because we don't just, you know, pass laws for large municipalities, we'd pass them for all.
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, evidently trifle elections count large or small, so thank you for your comment.
All right, thank you. Representative New.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is regarding the language associated with special elections, extending that mm-hmm. time. In the elections bill last year, there was a provision included that would also, so currently a special election on a general election cannot occur within 4 days of a holiday. And we had added a provision to also apply that to a special election primary. It was included in the special elections, in the elections bill last year. I wonder if that would be appropriate language to be included in this bill as well. And of course, relating to the special election, was it just last year in Senate District 11, the primary fell within the 4 days, and that led to the similar problems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, I mean, incorporating that into here, I think would be reasonable. Because holidays do have an impact, especially with short time frames, more so than others. So I would not take any exception to that. And again, this does have another stop in government operations, even though this is the, you know, the Elections Committee, which I certainly understand.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional questions? No? All right. With that, would you like to make any closing remarks, Chair Dean?
Madam Chair, members, I believe we've voted on this in the past. It didn't make it all the way through the end. So here we are back again, and I would just ask for your support.
Okay. Wonderful. With that, Representative Dean renews his motion that House File 3429 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed?
Nope.
All right. And it looks like that The motion prevails, so House File 3429 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Thank you, Chair Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for keeping the seat warm. Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner, for doing such a great job with my bill. Next up, we have House File 3006, Representative Freiberg bill. If you'd like to come forward, Representative and or Chair, and represent, speak to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. This bill would put us in line with 46 other states in the country. It is a simple change. All it does is say that the legislature does not need to legislatively give its approval for the state to accept federal election security funds through the HAVA program. Just the last couple of years, I don't feel like much has been added by the legislature. In fact, I think a great deal has been taken away. I think our election security has been kind of held hostage by unrelated issues, and I just think we should do what 46 other states do and trust our Secretary of State's office to follow the federal law. There is a lot of requirements in federal law as to how the funds can be spent, and just follow their practice. This bill is my initiative. It wasn't brought forward by the Secretary of State's office. I do appreciate him being here to give some guidance on it as well, if he'd like to, or if members would like him to.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. You do have a testifier there. I'm happy to give him some purview to speak to this, and we'll open it up to the public and then to members' questions afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Thanks for your time and attention. As Representative Freiberg said, this is not an initiative of our office, but we're happy to support it. This has to do with Statute 5.30, which was written right after the Federal Help America Vote Act was passed in 2002. There's no one on this committee who was there, including me, in 2003 when it was passed by the legislature. There are competing stories and narratives about why that was done. But all I know is that when it was done in 2003, the same bill that contained the structure here of 5.30 also contained the money for then Secretary Mary Kiffmeyer to get $6.5 million in election funds. So it never was at the time, and I assume was not intended to, be a vehicle to block these election funds. I wish I could say the same about 2018 and 2019. Now, to zoom out a little bit, in 2016, Minnesota was one of the 21 states that was targeted by a foreign government whose election system was targeted. We know that. We've dealt with that. Many of you have been really hands-on in both parties and both chambers on this issue. So election security is real. It's the number one threat facing our elections today. Idea that in 2020 or at any time, some adversary, foreign or domestic, might try to interfere with our elections through interfering with the instruments of our democracy. So in 2018, Congress acted and the President acted, and I give them both the credit. And they appropriated to all the states millions of dollars for election security. Our share of that was $6.6 million, only $100,000 off from what Secretary Kiffmeyer received back then. Only using this statute, 5.30, it was held up for over a year, and we're suffering for that now. Now, I want to make no mistake, our system is secure. I feel very good about where we are, but as Representative Nash, among many others who as an expert in this issue, can tell you no institution can tell you with certainty that that nothing bad will happen. I can't say it with certainty. U.S. Bank can't say it. Target can't say it. The Minnesota legislature can't say it. I do feel good about where we are, but having that money delayed for over a year has really put us at unnecessary risk. There are things we can't do this year because we didn't get that money. Now, this was not a partisan issue. The vote was something like 126 votes off of the House floor here, Democrats, Republicans, almost everybody, almost unanimity. The problem was in the other body. So it's not a partisan issue. And I think the problem here, there are a few problems with this statute. Number one, it's probably unconstitutional, probably. It would take a lot of time and effort and expense. We have a supremacy clause in this country. I know of no other circumstance where Congress and the President of the United States can appropriate money for a particular narrow purpose, and a state can shortstop it, can intervene and say, no, we're not doing it. We're not accepting the money. And I ask members, regardless of the political configuration right now, I really ask you to zoom out a little bit and think about this and the various combinations that could lie ahead. The Help America Vote Act is very broad. It includes money for various and different types of election-related expenditures. So imagine President Nikki Haley in a few years and Congress appropriating money for all the states to implement photo ID. And imagine a DFL legislature saying, no, I don't care what you did, Congress or President of the United States. I know these are federal dollars, not state dollars. 5.30 says we can sit on it forever. That is not a proper exercise, I think, of state power. That's kind of a legal mumbo-jumbo legal argument, I understand. But I don't think it's constitutional, probably. I think if someone had the time, effort, and money to sue, there's a good chance that a federal court would say you can't do this. But more to the point, regardless of the constitutional dimension, do we really want to be in that position as a state? Do we want a state statute short-stopping federal funds for any purpose? You can well imagine the precedent set by this bill. I'm surprised it hasn't happened, frankly. There are people in this committee or elsewhere that would love to short-stop money intended for other federal purposes that they don't agree with, regardless of party, whether it's family planning funds or whether it's border enforcement funds. Imagine one political party or another saying, well, we did this with 5.30, so let's put a statute saying that if ICE wants to spend money in Minnesota, the legislature has to approve it first. Or if the Federal Department of Health and Human Services wants to give family planning funds to Minnesota, that we can stand in the way of that. So I just think theoretically, I ask folks to take themselves out of the current and think about the future and whether we want a statute like this on the books. There was very real harm done in the year-long or more delay in these funds. We got another batch of funds from the federal government this time. We just got them, so we're trying to push that boulder up the hill again. And wouldn't you know it, we're already seeing the same kind of delays, not in this body, but in the other body that we saw this time a year ago or 2 years ago. So this has been used, unfortunately, as a mechanism to withhold federal funds in favor of or in exchange for other policy items. And apart from the constitutional dimension, I think it's done some harm. I think it's been misused and abused. And there's no real reason to have it again. It's only going to make us less safe.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. In my haste to try to move this quickly, I forgot to move the bill. So I will move forward House File 30006 to the Committee on Government Operations. Is there any testimony from the public? Okay, we'll go to members' questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to talk about a couple of things that have been going on in the legislature around the Blue Ribbon Commission on IT. Representative Bonner serves on that with me. And earlier in StateGovFi, we talked about how it is a very bipartisan effort to take the funds that we have relative to IT initiatives here in the state of Minnesota and begin moving things forward in a very strong bipartisan manner. And because of that has happened in the interim, I understand that, but because of that, I don't support this. And Mr. Secretary, you know that I have spoken loudly in favor of election cybersecurity, much to the chagrin of some people that we might have heard from. But here's the thing. I take my role as a legislator very, very seriously, and statute says that we are the funding mechanism for things, and we have oversight of your budget. And when you were a legislator, I know you took that same responsibility very seriously. Take that responsibility that is in statute and marry it with the Blue Ribbon Commission that is working hard to move things forward. I can't support this. I don't support this. I think that we need to take a pause and understand And maybe we talk to our colleagues in the other body. And we'll speak slow and use flashcards. But thanks for those few laughs. But I think that we need to help them understand that this is an important issue and that there is a place, I believe, that the legislature needs to be involved, must be involved. And I can only surmise that you felt the same way because this is not your initiative. So you did not request this. You didn't raise your hand and said, hey, I need the help. I think there's a solution here, and it's called working together. And I'm not going to back down on that. I think this is very, very serious. And Representative Freiberg, I'm going to disagree with you here. I don't think that this is something that we want to do. I think this sets a bad precedent. I think this eventually opens up the door to say, we'll just find a way to bypass the legislature. The people of Minnesota send us here to handle the money that is you know, collected in taxes and money that is sent from the feds that is also their tax money into the state. I'm not going to relinquish my responsibility, and I would encourage my colleagues to also not relinquish their responsibility. And before I forget, I'm going to ask for a roll call on this vote.
A roll call has been requested, and I'm not 100% sure that there was a question there, Representative Nash, but I see that the Secretary has two fingers up, so I will call on you, Mr. Secretary.
I do. Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Nash, I appreciate all the work you've done on election security and IT matters in general, truly. I guess I would say this, and you were there for the state government finance discussion. Some other folks brought up some similar points and sounded some similar notes. You know, I'm all for oversight. You need to exercise it vigorously, no matter who the governor is, no matter who holds what office. And I'm happy to be hauled or asked or hauled, I suppose, before this committee or any other and justify and explain why we spent any state funds or federal funds for that matter. Or, as I'll make the offer here publicly, any one of you who ever want to meet with folks in our office, I don't have to be in the room. I don't need to be in the room controlling things. I'll leave. And if you want to talk to the civil servants and others who do this, it's an open, non-expiring invitation for you to do that. But this is different. This is short-stopping federal money. This isn't oversight. This is stopping it. And I guess by this logic, I would ask the rhetorical question, why not do this across areas? Why not have a version of 5.30 in almost every other substantive area where there's a federal outlay where Congress and the President of the United States have said, we are giving this money for a federal purpose to you, and the state could just intercept it, could just totally short-stop it. That's what this is. Or hold it hostage for other things. That's what's happening now in the other body. So I just ask you to think about that precedent. Two things can be true at the same time. This can be overkill, and you can be vigorous practitioners of oversight at the same time, in my judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Seppi. Representative Freiberg?
I can save my remarks for my closing.
Okay.
It was more of a comment, as you said.
Next, we have Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, certainly I have concerns about this, but my question really relates to the requirement of a state match. So with this standing appropriation, you would be, or the Secretary of State's office would be allowed to spend those HAVA dollars. What happens? You know, say we're running a deficit. I mean, it wasn't all that many years ago that we had a $5 billion deficit in our state budget. What happens if we hit a year where there's a deficit and those matching funds are not appropriated, but the Secretary of State's office has now spent those funds? I would ask Representative Freiberg, what would happen in that situation?
Thank you, Representative New. Representative Freiberg or Mr. Secretary?
Sure. This came up in this bill, I forgot to mention, has already been heard in the state government finance division, and that question did come up, that it is more of a finance issue, so I can quickly answer it to the extent it's germane to this subcommittee as well. But there is a process in place, and I wish the fiscal analyst were here, but she outlined it, where the LAC the LCC, the Coordinating Commission, has the ability to if there's a concern about finance, they have the ability to stop it. And I don't know if the Secretary has any additional comments as
well. Mr. Secretary.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative New, I would say this. It really, at the discretion of whoever Secretary of State, you are taking a risk. The federal law says You can start spending the money before you get the match, but just know that if by 2 years after enactment you don't get the match, that's on you. We will claw back that money. So me or, you know, I'm passing through. I'm the 22nd Secretary of State. There will be 22 or more after me. Think in terms of the future. That person, if this federal scheme continues the way it is, will have to make a judgment call. And they would be taking a big risk by spending a lot of it soon without getting the match. That's a very fair point.
Thank you. Representative New, you had a second question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment on that, I think that alone makes this bill really untenable for me. The reason being, we all know if, of course, a less responsible Secretary of State were to move forward and spend those funds and not get that match, who's on the hook? It's not going to be the Secretary of State's office. It's going to be Minnesotans with increased taxes paying for those expenditures that really could have been prevented. The other question I have, I think we could use some clarity. There is statute regarding reviewing of federal expenditures, and that already is in statute, that the legislature has the ability to do that. And I wonder if Mr. Gehring would be willing to review that for us a little bit, because that does already exist. I mean, it's 3.3005 if we want to review that, but I think it would probably help to understand that better.
Okay, Mr. Gehring, I know that I was really, really late. We have the room till 12, and if we don't finish up, we can certainly come back at 6:30 as well. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair and committee members, yes, so this is the process that Representative Freiberg already mentioned that Ms. Roberts outlined in the State Government Finance Committee, but there is a process where, in statute, where when federal money comes into the state, it either gets included in the governor's budget for expenditure, or if it comes during the interim period, there's a process where the Legislative Advisory Committee is authorized to review those planned expenditures and then make recommendations one way or the other. And depending on whether the expenditure needs to happen on an urgent basis or non-urgent basis, there's different steps that happen in that process. But that's the mechanism that applies generally to federal funds that come into state, is that there is this sort of route that the money goes, so that there are legislators involved in seeing how the money might be spent and where it might go.
Thank you.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
New.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just to clarify then, this language would bypass that procedure.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative New, so this would be just a statutory appropriation of the federal funds to the Secretary of State, so that LAC process wouldn't apply.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Freiberg and Secretary of State Steve Simon, I have just a couple of questions for you. How many states actually follow this type of procedure? And I guess the part two to that would be, how do other states handle similar appropriations of federal funds?
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonner, I think we are one of four states that has this procedure. I can't speak knowledgeably on what other states do with their federal funds. With these federal funds, you mean this particular kind under the Help America Vote Act? Oh, that I do know. Under the Help America Vote Act, it is a direct pipeline from the EAC in Washington, D.C., the Election Assistance Commission, to an account that the Secretary of State or the chief elections official, in some states it's not the Secretary of State, gets access to immediately.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you, Chair. Secretary of State, and have we heard, or Representative Freiberg, have you heard of any other states who do not have this provision in place, who have encountered issues or concerns around having those funds going directly rather than going through the legislature?
Mr.
Representative Freiberg, Mr. Secretary?
I haven't heard of any. But
no, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner, no. If I understand your question, no. What I can say is we were the last state in the country to get this money. In 46, 47 other states, they got it automatically. in three states. Well, I don't know. I don't know if they got it more quickly or less than the other three states. I do know that we were last in the country to get it, and it wasn't even close. We were last by over a year to get the money.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Chair Dean. And just a comment, I guess. One thing is, and this is my opinion, but I guess I am having a difficulty understanding. I appreciate, as a legislative body, that we need to be very mindful of our responsibility of being good stewards of the people's money. And I completely understand and respect that. And but in this particular case, I will say that the purpose for this money is fairly narrowly tailored. And I think that there isn't a lot of value added to the process by the legislature in being the go-between here. Not to mention, I know it was brought up that we may have a concern about if we have matching funds, but I guess as good stewards of the people's money, it is my opinion personally that as the folks who are watching the bottom line and watching the budget, if we know that we have a bill coming due, it should be incumbent upon us as legislators to make sure that we are honoring those bills that are coming due. And so I guess I don't see that as a barrier for me. I just feel like we if we know the matching funds need to be appropriated, that it is our duty as the legislature to do so. So in that respect, I appreciate your time today. I appreciate you being here, Representative Feiberg. And thank you for bringing forward the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Simon, in the 46 other states that have access to this money without a barrier, are we seeing the Office of the Secretary spending money irresponsibly? Are we seeing significant clawbacks? Do you know?
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mann, no clawbacks that I know of. The EAC, this Election Assistance Commission, will audit all of us. So we already get audits to make sure that not only are we spending the money within the six narrow categories set forth in law, that's all you can spend it on, six categories that are set forth in state law, but that we're accounting for it in the correct way. For example, we have to track certain people's time on certain projects within a quarter of an hour increments. So you have to say this person worked on this project for 27 hours and 30 minutes or 28 hours and 45 minutes. We have to track it in 15-minute increments. If we don't do that, we could face some sort of repercussions as well. So there are vigorous federal audits of this federal money.
Thank you.
Great. And Representative O'Driscoll, and then I believe we're going to go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's more of a comment than it is a question. I want to start by saying thank you, Secretary Simon, because last year when we were looking at this, you brought forward your work plan. And you said to the legislature, here is what I think we need. I want your input. I want your thoughts on this. And we were the appropriating body on that. If we do the what's being advocated in this bill, the legislature could be with a different Secretary of State, because it's not a statutory requirement, to come forward to talk to the legislature about how that money is being spent. The real way that we could find that out would be after the audit has been done. We get a post report as to where things were in a Secretary of State's office that was not as forthcoming as you were. I think it's a good check and balance, because the legislature is going to be asked to appropriate a matching portion of this. And the legislature should have agreement with the Secretary of State's office. As has been pointed out this year and this committee today and in previous committees in previous years, we have a lot of folks who have IT expertise, and they may want to get a comfort level with those kinds of things. So coming to the legislature to ask for that approval isn't the end of the world, but it also helps to keep the checks and balances of where the monies are appropriated and where those monies go. And so, as I say, it's not more of a question, it's more of a comment that the current system, and I have been an advocate to help you in this body to try to be able to get those funds. My comfort level has been is you've come with a work plan, and you've said, here's what we're going to be doing, here's what we're going to be looking at doing, here's how I plan on spending the money. And we spent countless hours in committees over the years working on that. I like that comfort level. I think it helps preserve voter integrity, and it helps with transparency as to what's happening and what the people in the state of Minnesota, when they put their head to their pillow at night, know that we're working to try to be transparent, to show them what's going on, and to help them preserve the integrity of their elections in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Seeing as a roll call has been called, I will renew my motion for House File 3006 be re-referred to Government Operations. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Deeb?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Halverson? Representative Mann? Representative New?
No.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Seeing there is four ayes and three nays, the motion prevails. You're on your way back to your committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. And members, last on the agenda, if I find it, is House File 983, Representative Elkins. This bill will be referred to Government Operations, like many of us, Bill. So I will move your bill, House File 983, be re-referred to Government Operations. Go ahead and present your bill, and then we'll open up conversation.
Yeah, and we do have an amendment to present.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is an A1 amendment. If you would, I will move your A1 amendment, and if you could speak to the amendment, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we heard this bill extensively last year. The amendments are technical in nature. These are small changes that were suggested to us by local elections officials who are currently administering ranked choice voting in their cities. The amendment itself is, pretty self-evident in terms of the changes that are required. But basically, the bill. Under current state law, charter cities are allowed to elect to conduct their local elections using ranked choice voting. This would extend that right to statutory cities, townships, counties, and school boards as well.
It also Representative Elkins, if I could put you to pause real quick.
Yep.
I was curious about the A1 and those changes. If you could just speak directly to them, sure. And then we will adopt the A1.
Yeah, so the A1 amendment basically changes the definition of a cast vote record, clarifies that. In Subdivision 7, local elected officials basically changes the terminology briefly from chief to local, just a wording change suggested by, local elected elections officials, clarifies that there must be a tabulation center for the physical counting, but only if there's a manual accounting tallying of the votes that are required. The change in in Section 7 specifies that they must be able to the election officials must be able to provide basically a spreadsheet of the total for inspection. Section 12 adds language that the requirements in this section are to the extent practical, and then on the last section 14 changes the term from county auditor to local election official. See, those are pretty technical cleanups.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Any questions on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Okay, now to your bill.
Okay. Again, this one just extends the ability for additional local governments to conduct their local elections using ranked choice voting, including counties, school boards, statutory cities, and townships. And it standardizes the form of the ballot and the method of tabulating the votes for both all of those as well as charter cities as well, so that all of the local election officials will have a standardized method of designing the ballots and counting them.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. We're running close to, well, we're over, mm-hmm. But running close to wrapping up here, I would like to ask if there's any public testimony and if you could hold that to 3 minutes, if any. If not, we're all fine with not having any. Oh, any questions from committee members? Yes, we have heard this a couple times.
Yeah, the Secretary of State is prepared to make comments, but if it's not necessary.
You know, we've enjoyed seeing your face this morning, Mr. Secretary, but I'm not sure you need to come up and comment. There will be other opportunities in other committees as this continues to move forward again. So with that said, I renew my motion for House File 983 as amended be re-referred to Government Operations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign?
No.
Okay, the motion prevails and you're on your way to Government Operations. Thank you, committee members. Thanks for being accommodating when I had to be at three places at one time. This meeting is adjourned.